Most fads fade, trends get tired. Every once in a while, though, something like the electric guitar makes the leap from novelty item to permanent fixture in pop culture, and it changes our society along the way. Patrick Kiger is the co-author of a new book called Poplorica, a popular history of the fads, maverick inventions, and lore that shaped modern America. It looks at some cultural ideas, people, and inventions that have had a lasting influence, like the first diet bestseller, or pantyhose. If you have a nominee for a pop culture event or a moment you think qualifies as a piece of American poplorica, our telephone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Or you can email us, TOTN at NPR.org. Patrick Kiger is here with us in Studio 3A, and welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Great to be here, Neil.
So poplorica, does it mean what it sounds like?
Yeah, it's basically the concept of these undercurrents in our culture that are sort of bubbling under the surface, all this strangeness. And we've coined this word to sort of synthesize that. But it's the story of unlikely things that turn out differently than anyone could have expected and affect us in unexpected ways.
Well, give me a for instance.
Well, for instance, you mentioned the first, pantyhose is an invention that who would have ever thought that something so uncomfortable and
you have personal experience with this?
Well, I won't tell all my secrets on the air, but there's something that who would have thought that would become part of every woman's wardrobe, or the obsession with lawn care. There's something that, the origin of it actually is a man in the 19th century who wrote a book telling everyone about the godliness of lawn care and how it was sort of a sign of virtue, and look where it got us now.
Hmm. So how do you pick these cultural landmarks?
Well, Marty and I we're both news reporters, and you're always chasing the event du jour and not really thinking about, you're busy thinking about the next one when it comes. I guess we sort of took a deep breath at some point and stopped back and started thinking about all this strange stuff underneath. But it really, some of them were things that we just had always been curious about. Other things were, like, for example, the Edsel was something that I always, you hear about it again and again, but you wonder, why is it that you keep hearing about it after all these years? And so we sort of traced back and looked at how that influenced us in a lot of ways.
Now, some of the topics you write about are making news even today. Obesity, for example. You write about the woman who wrote the first diet bestseller. Who was she and what did she do?
Well, Lulu Hunt Peters, a doctor actually in the early years of the 20th century. Before Dr. Peters, people weren't quite as fixated on weight as they are now. The reigning sex goddess of the early 20th century was Lillian Russell, who weighed 186 pounds and often would grab a piece of pie and gobble it on the way to a stage performance. Even when people did worry about weight, they didn't really have a solution for it. There were a lot of kooky diets, eating 14 pounds of strawberries a day or chewing things 32 times. Dr. Peters actually was the first to incorporate new discoveries about units of calories and how units of energy were stored by the body, and came up with this system of eating less and also exercising to control weight.
Counting calories.
Yes.
Huh. And that really, I think you write that she also injected a moral element into this whole diet equation.
Yeah, that's right. She modeled her book, either consciously or subconsciously, on Mary Baker Eddy's book about Christian Science, and the titles are very similar, actually. And she taught her readers that there was that being overweight was a sign of weakness or lack of discipline, a moral failing almost, and that being thin was the virtuous thing, and also that it was a virtue that was worth suffering for, and that's really led to a lot, I think, of the problems we have today.
Again, we're inviting you to call in with your suggestions of inventions or other items that may have changed American society or world society. Our first caller is Liz, and Liz joins us on the line from Jacksonville, Florida.
Hi.
Hi.
My recommendation is that you consider the blow dryer, because when the blow dryer, blow hair dryer came in, a lot of things went out the window, the hair setting, the overnight in curlers. It really spawned a whole lot of change in terms of the ability to get out the door quickly and how complex hairdos were. And for women, it was kind of a big freeing thing.
And Patrick Kiger, I suspect that if you think pantyhose are uncomfortable, try a night in hair curlers.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I can remember my mother actually wearing them when I was a kid and being puzzled by that strange sort of space alien kind of look that she had with them. But I think the blow dryer is interesting because it was the first step of the blow dryer, and then we get into hairspray.
Hairspray came before blow drying.
Well, I mean, but the use of, sort of fixatives. I mean, you start having a Harris topiary, basically, and I think that's, that's something we could do a lot with.
Yep.
Liz, thanks for the suggestion. You may find it enshrined in the next edition.
Oh, I'm excited. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. Let's see. Let's go with Liberty, and Liberty's on the line with us from Boise, Idaho.
Hi there.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to make a comment about kind of the advent of reality television. Kind of started as something that was just on a couple of cable channels, and now it's all over the place, and you can't seem to get away from it. I wonder if that's not necessarily consumable, but it's something that does kind of affect our culture. Would you consider that part of this craze?
Well, it's reality TV is something that I think we haven't fully seen the impacts of it. I think it's certainly turned into something very different than what anyone would have envisioned it would be. I mean, the roots of it in some ways probably go back to the cinema verite and, D.A. Pennebaker and these people who did real documentaries where they were sort of trying to, or even back to the,
Flaherty, Nanook of the North.
There you go.
Man of Aaron.
Yes.
But they didn't do it for millions of people all watching watching them eat worms at the same time.
That's true. Exactly. Yeah, so that's actually, that's an interesting trend. I'd love to see where that goes because I think that's going to have all kinds of effects on our culture, some of which are very difficult to predict right now.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to have to see if it's just a fad or if it has lasting effects, and heaven help us all, Liberty.
Yes.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Patrick Kiger, you say that before Joe Pine, talk show hosts were polite. We have him to thank for Rush and Howard and Geraldo and Jerry?
Yes. It's interesting because I think really in the earlier part of what some people would probably call the golden age of broadcasting, I think the standard of behavior was more sort of the Arthur Godfrey or Art Linkletter, cardigan sweater kind of charm and audience and welcomeness. But Joe Pine was a guy, a World War II vet with a wooden leg and a nasty disposition who his whole shtick was really to get people mad and see how far he could push things. And he would insult callers in the show, call them names, make fun of their mothers. He would berate guests. He's trying to get a rise out of everyone. And it really, I think that the roots of what you see today with the sort of smash mouth, shouting head discourse really, it all comes in a way from Joe Pine.
And if recollection serves, he came, perhaps no surprise, from New York.
I think he started, I'm not sure exactly where he started now that I'm thinking about this. I know he started at a small station in Delaware, but he ends up in California and ends up on television and ends up influencing a lot of people today.
Joe Pine is no longer with us.
Yes.
But his influence is felt on every airwave across the country just about every single day. So a man whose influence on all of American culture, and I guess indeed in some ways on world culture, has yet to be measured. He's a part of a new book called Pop Lorica, which is written. Its co-author Patrick Kiger is here with us in Studio 3A. You're listening to Talk of the Nation, which is coming to you from NPR News. Let's get another caller on the line, and Chris is with us from Santa Rosa, California.
Hey, how's it going?
Hi,
okay.
Chris.
So I was thinking, what about bumper stickers? I mean, something that started as pretty much a novelty is now just a forum for individual expression. I mean, something that simple that, lots of people are pretty much plastering their cars these days with bumper stickers from bumper to bumper, literally.
Well, that's an interesting one. I'd like to delve in back and find out who was the first to come up with the idea, the first bumper sticker, and
but unlike something like the bobblehead doll, as Chris says, this has evolved into a form of expression. And I don't know how old they are, but they've been around as long as I have, which is depressingly long.
Well, and a form of art too. I mean, you see bumper stickers altered. I know that when I lived in California, one of the popular things to do was to get the bumper stickers from In-N-Out Burger and kind of alter them and make them say funny things. And that's that's something you see. I think that bumper stickers are, that's an interesting one. That's an interesting one.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Not a problem. Thank you.
All right. A girl yesterday won the All-American High School Slam Dunk Contest, beating all the boys this past Tuesday. You say it was Julius Erving who turned the slam dunk into an art form?
Yes, I think that you know, he wasn't the first to dunk. A lot of people may think that.
Oh, hardly.
Yes, exactly. But you know, it was actually invented by accident in the 1940s by a player named Bob Curlin, from my research. But Irving was the first to take something that had been sort of an underground phenomenon on playgrounds of America and really make it into a form of self-expression. That's really what the dunk became. It wasn't just a way of scoring 2 points, but a way of affirming your dominance, of saying who you were. And that's something that really captured the imagination of Americans, and to the point today where we have the term slam dunk is so ubiquitous in our world that it's you could get millions of hits on Google when you search for it. Missionaries talk about slam dunking souls to Jesus, and it just goes everywhere.
Let's talk with Nisa. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
It's Nisi.
Nisi, and she's joining us from Victor, Idaho.
Yeah, hi. My idea was plywood.
Plywood. Is something as prosaic as plywood eligible for a pop lorica?
Sure, potentially. I'd have to delve into the history of plywood. I certainly have a lot of it in my house.
Just the idea of any kind of, substrate wood. You know, instead of using wood, like from the tree, like 2x4s and whatnot, you can buy it, 4x8 sheets.
And laminated wood, of course, goes back to
what
the bows used by Mongol horsemen. This is an important element of human history.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think it's also a sort of the artificial building element or the artificial environment. I mean, when I lived in Baltimore for a while, and the big thing was formstone, which is this sort of fake stone that everybody had on their homes, and they would even have plaques that said genuine formstone on it. So, plywood's an example of something too, where the artificial has become more real than the real once was.
Yeah.
Thanks for the call.
Yeah, you bet.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Velcro, writes Steve McAtee, Velcro has changed the world from shoes to medical equipment.
I think that's a strong candidate, Velcro. I think it's also, my son's fascinated with the ripping sound of Velcro, so there's sort of a multimedia aspect to it.
Let's get another caller in. Chris is with us from Williamsburg, Virginia.
Hi there, Neil. My idea is really more of a, I guess you could say, a big picture idea. The when cable television came along and HBO was first introduced, I my personal theory is this was the beginning of the end of Western civilization. That once all kinds of things were on television for anybody to be able to see, all kinds of R-rated movies and stuff. The next thing you know, broadcast television had to do something to keep up. So we go from Mike and Carol Brady in their very polite Brady Bunch world to something like Married with Children, and I think that there's a pretty direct connection between the kinds of more outrageous things that were able to be seen on HBO and what has now become part and parcel of our popular culture. And every year the envelope gets pushed further and further and further, even into halftime shows and stuff.
I think we'd best leave that right there, Chris.
All right.
Thanks for the call and the suggestion. Today is the anniversary of Betty Ford's invention. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, Betty Ford is fascinating, a fascinating figure and a really important figure in our culture because before her time, having a drinking problem or being an addict was really something that, it was like Ray Milland in Last Weekend. You're trying to hide it all the time. Betty Ford was the first person to really go public with her problems and really both reached a lot of people with this idea that you could get treatment for these things and rejoin society, but also started the sort of confessional culture where it became a good thing to tell everybody about all your problems. And that's really, you see that today everywhere.
Patrick Kiger, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Patrick Kiger is co-author of the book called Pop Lorica, a popular history of the fads, maverick inventions, and lore that shaped modern America. He joined us here in Studio 3A. Ira will be here tomorrow with Science Friday. Lynn Neary is filling in on Monday. I'll see you Tuesday. I'm Washington. I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.